Welcome to Conversations Different, a podcast of the Santa Fe New Mexican focusing on the interesting people and issues of Northern New Mexico. This week, we welcome Rashawn Ahmad, a founder of Earthseed Black Arts Alliance, Vital Spaces executive director, local DJ, vocalist, promoter, and activist about town. He is here to talk to us, at least in part, about this year's Juneteenth celebration in Santa Fe and anything else he wants to discuss. Welcome, Rashawn.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're excited to talk about this because, you know, growing up in New Mexico and the tricultural myth is repeated and repeated, and so many people forget about all the other cultures and races that live here with us and have been here from the very beginning, you know, including Black people.
Yeah. Are you from Santa Fe?
I'm from Las Vegas, New Mexico.
From Las Vegas, yeah.
And I honestly remember when we got football players at Highlands and we had more Black people that moved into town. And it wasn't a, this was a really exciting moment because it, all of a sudden our football team got great and we won the national championship. So we loved it. It was different. And then I moved to Texas and I lived in a town where, like, my school was probably 30% African-American.
Yeah.
And it was just, you learn a lot about the world. It's a different world.
It's a trip because I moved here from Oakland, which has a large Black population. Lived in Boston before that. Grew up in Los Angeles. From New Jersey, from Trenton, New Jersey. And so, you know, it's a trip when I first moved here. Like, there's lots of stories of, like, I knew a Black guy in high school. Like, I knew a Black, like, there's, like, the Black families that were in Santa Fe, and it's wild to me. And also, it's such a different and beautiful atmosphere to be in and to be adding different cultures and traditions. This will be the fourth year that we've done Juneteenth on the plaza. And for us, it was important to have it on the plaza, right? Knowing a lot of the history of what the plaza was and how all the folks, that was like the gathering place for so many cultures. And you know, initially people were telling us, oh, it'll be easier if you don't do it on a, do it over there.
Right, right.
We're like, no, we want to do it because we belong here. There's lots of, like you said, there's a deep history of, from the Buffalo Soldiers to Blackdom, New Mexico. There's lots of history of African-Americans here. And we're just excited to be a part of this community and like adding on with our culture and traditions and respecting and loving what's been here for ages and ages.
That's right. Yeah. I go back all the way to Esteban, you know, the guy that came. Yeah, he was the Moor. So it definitely.
That guy's story is wild.
Yes. He had an interesting life.
Wow.
Yeah. That's a movie waiting to be made.
I'm surprised it hasn't been made yet. Yeah. When I first learned about it, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Who is this?
Yeah. Yeah, I had never heard of Juneteenth when I was a little girl growing up in Las Vegas. And then my stepdad moved us to Lubbock, Texas. And Slayton is the first place I lived because there were no homes in Lubbock because they had a big tornado and wiped them out.
Yeah.
But I learned about it in fifth grade history.
Mm.
So for people who don't know what Juneteenth is, tell why it's such an important day.
Yeah, it was, you know, when I learned about it, I was like re-angered all over again because essentially, you know, like slavery.
They didn't tell you.
Right. Yeah. Slavery became abolished. And I think it was June 19th, 1865 is when the soldiers finally marched into Galveston, Texas to let the folks who were enslaved there know that this ended 2 years ago. Like you're all like,
they owe you 2 years at least of back wages,
quote unquote free. And and so it's that celebration of like the last group of enslaved people to understand that they were quote unquote free.
Right.
Right. And so that's what we're celebrating, and it's a day of celebration, and it's also called, you know, Jubilee and Jubilation Day and Emancipation Day and Juneteenth, and it's just a celebration of that.
It's really important, I think, to think about like the megalith state in the South that kept people, you know, enslaved all of those years, that built the country on their backs, and then at the very last even refused to say, yes, you people can have a choice to leave or stay or work or whatever. I mean, it's just really evil at the core, I think.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I got to see Jessamine Ward at the Literary Festival.
Nice.
And it was just her discussion of New Orleans and the way they used to have little corners of the city all over to sell people. It just, I don't think I can go to that city with the same feeling as I used to.
Yeah. You know? I mean, and what that city, I mean, just New Orleans, I mean, geez, the amount of history there and what it represents and all the music and art and culture, that's American culture that it came from. I mean, this I'm really excited because this year, actually, the headliner is a band from New Orleans. It's a brass band called the Heartache Brass Band, who I've been playing in my DJ sets for years. They have this cover of Sexual Healing that's amazing.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, me too. You should hear their cover. It's crazy. Oh. But, you know, along that, we'll also have a jazz group there. We'll have a hip hop group there. We'll have a funk group there. We'll have DJs playing there.
Right. And so I heard there was gospel music, too.
There'll be gospel music. Yep. That's the following day.
Okay.
But, yeah, we're trying to represent, you know, all aspects of African-American culture and celebrate.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I think you're right about the importance of the plaza, because that's where things happen in Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. And it brings people of all sorts down there. Yeah. And it also, I think, you know, represents that we have many cultures in our town and we want to honor all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, the history of what that place has been in all the different iterations of it. It's also just wonderful to add on to that tradition, like knowing people who are from here and who've grown up here, who have all the stories about what it used to be and who used to be there and their grandmothers who used to sell things on the plaza and like the gathering space and the cruise line and like all of the things. It's really not only important, but it's humbling to be able to add on to that beautiful tradition that's been here in that place. So we're excited.
That's going to be fun. Tell me the date, because June 19th this year is
a Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah. So we're celebrating on June 15th.
Okay.
But, you know, we're celebrating on that day, but there's a whole weekend of Juneteenth activities that are being planned. So we'll have that. But even the day before, there's a thing called Black Seen and Unseen in Santa Fe. There's a group of women who have put together. They've been talking to a bunch of Black folks, hearing their stories, and they're going to put a theater production on about that. We'll have some food that's going to go before that. And then the following day, there's going to be a picnic in the park with like dancing and food. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is going to be Juneteenth celebrations all across Santa Fe.
And that'll be the weekend before the actual Juneteenth.
Yes.
Which in city of Santa Fe has a day off because it's an actual official holiday.
It's a federal holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's important. That recognizes it at the biggest level.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the reasons we were able to actually, you know, the first year we weren't able to have vendors on the plaza because there was these ordinances that only like the big, I think they're called the Big Six.
The heritage events.
Yeah, the heritage events could have, but we've been able to, along with Pride and along with Indigenous Peoples Day, we now are three other events that, because they're federally recognized holidays, are allowed to have vendors on the plaza, which means that we're not only singing and dancing on stage, but our wider community can be part of our celebration day, the folks that are making and just part of our community.
Right. So that means, and also you don't get hungry while you're there, which is important. Mm-hmm. On that note, we will take a quick break and be back in a moment discussing Juneteenth.
Thanks, Inez. This is Patrick Dorsey, publisher of the Santa Fe New Mexican. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Conversations Different with Inez Russell Gomez. Great local content is only possible with a talented staff dedicated to bringing you the best local content possible. For that staff to do its work, we need your support by subscribing to the Santa Fe New Mexican. If you're already a subscriber, thank you. And if not, there's never been a better time to subscribe. In addition to our home-delivered newspaper that comes with full digital access, we also provide digital-only subscriptions for SantaFeNewMexican.com. We'll also be releasing more online-only audio and video programming moving forward. The Santa Fe New Mexican has been here for nearly 175 years, and we want to continue being your source for local news and information. Visit us at SantaFeNewMexican.com/subscribe or call us at 505-986-3010. Thank you.
It's a new day in New Mexico, and the doors to boundless opportunity are open as tens of thousands of New Mexicans reach higher to pursue a dream, broaden their horizons, and retrain for a better job. With the New Mexico Lottery and Opportunity Scholarships, you could build yourself a better future anywhere in the state. You put in the hard work, we'll help with the costs. For eligibility details, visit reachhighernm.com.
We are back with Conversations Different, talking to Rashawn Ahmad. Talk about your journey, because Santa Fe is a long way from Oakland, and I guess you're from New Jersey originally. Mm-hmm. How did you get here?
how did I get here? That's such a big question.
It's the essential question of life, right?
Yeah, I don't know how I got here, but like.
And why do you stay?
Oh, I love it here. It's my favorite place on the planet.
Yeah,
I've traveled,
you and me both.
I've traveled a lot. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people have a different story, but it's people who are not from here.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask them how they come. It's like, we all have the same. I came and then finished that sentence. You know,
yeah, it drew you back.
The sky and the dirt is what I always say. Like, I came. I used to come here even before I'm a father. Before I had kids, I'd come out here with my then partner. And we just love Santa Fe, love the whole Southwest. And I came here during a Christmas one time and like got an Airbnb and, you know, it rained and then the sun came out and then it started snowing and then bunny rabbits were, you know, it was doing exactly what it does.
Yes, right? Yes.
And I was just like, what
all
is
the
this
weather
magic?
In an hour.
Yeah, and just the sky lit up. It was just, I was just like, oh my gosh, if I could just live here. And, you know, similar things that are happening here happened that pushed me out of Oakland also. You know, the second tech wave came, gentrification followed.
And you can't afford to live in your hometown.
You can't afford to live in that. Personally, I don't really have a home necessarily. So every place I've been not from there, right?
Right.
So in Oakland, I wasn't from there. I lived in Boston before that, from New Jersey originally, but my family migrated from the South. But that push is something that is really hard to witness and watch in any place. And I've been here for about 12 years, but more than the time that I've been here, the people that I've known who are from here, the families that have been here, hearing those stories just is a little heartbreaking.
Yeah, no, and it's part of the modern America where we didn't build enough housing to keep people, mm-hmm. and you don't want too much growth and all of those pressures going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, my son has said he's never leaving because he's just not leaving his house. And he says, you guys can leave and I'll just stay here. So that's how he plans to not be gentrified out of his own home. And, you know, in northern New Mexico, we had a tradition of extended families all living together anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So part of maybe not a bright side, but, you know, one positive thing that could come out of it is maybe families will live together again because you don't always have to go out by yourself.
Yeah.
One of the things you're doing now is Vital Spaces, and mm-hmm. it got moved from the Outlet Mall, and now it's over on St. Michael's in the old Cinema Cafe space.
Mm.
That's what I read anyway. Is that still going on?
Kind of, sort of. So our model is that we take unused real estate, like developers that are like, oh, here's our building, and it's going to probably sit here for the next 2 years. And we say, let us go inside that building. We'll pay insurance. We'll pay rent. We'll make sure that the ceiling isn't being destroyed. And activate that space. And then when you ask us to leave, we'll leave, right? So that's been part of our model. So we had a place downtown. We were in the outlet malls until that got brought. We're now on the Midtown campus, the Yale College of Santa Fe. We're in the annex right across from Fogelson Library.
Okay.
Where we do a lot of our programs. We have studio artists that do trade, they do community work. They pay less than $100 in rent. We give away free art supplies every month to about 200 children, families, emerging artists. We do exhibition shows. We try to make sure that everyone has really easy access so there's no cost barrier. And we did just get, which we're now building out, is the old Cinema Cafe space on St. Michael's Drive. So that'll be our first kind of full-time space. We have a great long lease and we'll be able to support performing arts, which we haven't been able to support. So
I was going to say, and that's
dancers,
an addition.
Dancers, singers, break dancers, you know, musicians, concerts, lectures. All performing arts. We're excited to really open it up and have it be a real community space that folks can have access to.
That's pretty awesome because you'd think in a city that's built on creativity, you want to grow the next generation up.
Yeah.
And if you can't afford a studio, you can't afford your supplies, the people who are going to get into the arts are going to be from the more affluent families.
Right.
You know, it's just the way it goes.
Or even a place to get your first gig when you're starting your band, right? Or you know, you have whatever your outlet is, have a space to be able to go and do that. Or even an easy way to discover mediums that maybe you didn't even know you're interested in, you know, to catch a theater show on accident. That's also accessible because it's in the neighborhood. You know, a lot of folks talk about food deserts, but there's also a lot of art deserts where outside of downtown, there aren't a lot of spaces where people can easily access performing arts. So So we're excited to open this up.
Yeah. I've been going to, Triumph Musical Productions a lot because a lot of the singers who are young were in kindergarten with my kid, and I like watching them grow up and do this. And it's weird the places we've gone to see them play because it's, you know, everything from the high school gym to downtown to one of those kind of weird spaces out, across Rufina. So it's like we don't have that great of a model for performing arts places.
Yeah, we're coming. Yes. Yeah. We're excited to come online. We know that the need. I also throw a number of gigs in town. And so I just know that there's a lack of places for musicians to play, for people to go do a thing, right? Yeah. So we're excited to have a community space that's for mostly for like, it'll be for everyone, but especially locals and like marginalized folks who just don't, who have a harder time getting access to these spaces.
Oh, that's going to be exciting. That's my neighborhood too. So
oh, sweet.
I'm excited about that. Yeah. I remember that when it was the movie theater, it was one of the first ones to have popcorn and food. Mm-hmm. Unlike, you know, it's real common now. Yeah. And I just remember whenever I went, those chairs were so thick, I fell asleep.
Really? The couch? Yeah. You know, yeah. We have like three of those couches left and I've been walking people through and people who are from here walk in and they're like, oh, I remember this. And then they see those couches and they're like, oh, and it's like,
yes,
it all comes rushing back.
They were incredibly, incredibly comfortable. Yeah. It's best is, you know, it's better than your home because it's more comfortable than your couch and an incredible screen.
Yeah
it was nice. That's so when do you think that'll be ready for opening?
We're hoping in fall. You know, we're kind of going through a permitting process with the city right now and building out, working with contractors and engineers. We're building a green room so that because it was a movie theater, so we need to make sure that the stage will be able to support everything from, you know, jazz shows to flamenco dancers. So we're making sure that the stage is really we have a lot of consultations with all kind of performing artists to make sure that this will work for them. So yeah, we're hoping that over the next 4 months, we'll get everything built out. So that means probably 6 months.
Wow. That's just from planning and helping with Juneteenth and doing this, and then you have your own musical ventures that you do. How do you balance all of this?
You know, in my head, it's one thing. So it doesn't feel like a lot. It's just what I'm excited about is providing access and resource to folks who don't have it.
Right.
And so if that's doing free dance parties, if that's doing a free event, if that's opening up a community theater, all of it is in line with the underlying goal of just trying to make sure that folks who are not seen get seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on that, we'll take a quick break and be back in a moment with Rashaan Ahmad.
My name is Maria Jose Rodriguez Cadiz, and I am the executive director with Solace Sexual Assault Services. Our mission is to prevent sexual violence and empower survivors of sexual violence through restoring dignity, strength, and resiliency. For almost 51 years, Solace has reduced the impact of sexual violence. We do it by focusing on human rights, social justice, hope, and dignity. We believe survivors are experts in their own experiences and acknowledge that empowering them is crucial to their healing. Our advocacy, forensic interviewing, and therapy services are centered to their needs. Our sexual violence prevention programs in schools and community is just as important. Please check our website at findsolace.org. And if in need, you can call our 24/7 hotline, which is 800-721-7273. Your support is crucial to the lives of survivors. Thank you. Gracias.
We are back with Conversations Different. And one of the things I remember reading about the other nonprofit, the Earthseed Black Arts Alliance, is the discussion of curriculum for school children concerning Black Americans and maybe Black history in New Mexico. I don't know. What did that involve and how widespread is it now?
Yeah, so during the first year, maybe I say 2020 or 2021, I developed this this program called Black Story, Black Song, which was designed to go deeper into the story of Black Americans, some specifically Black New Mexicans. So I wanted to make sure that it was like 5-minute shorts. So I basically had folks come and talk about whatever the field of study was. If it was New Mexico history, if it was, you know, Black history before the Americas, if it was music, the history of hip hop. So there was like 7 different subjects, 5 different like shorts that we produced. And we had folks who were from here tell these stories. And we also added a piece of curriculum so you could go dive deeper into it if you wanted to. And this was designed for folks who were like homeschoolers and also for teachers, right?
Okay.
We're trying to just give an easy access knowing how overwhelmed teachers already are. We didn't want to add any work. but we wanted to make sure that these stories were accessible if folks wanted them. And so we put it out. The initial impetus was, if I could just get it into like Capital, that would be cool.
You know,
I was like, oh, cool. And Santa Fe High was like, yeah, we'll do it. And then Taos, and then eventually it went all the way to the state, and they sent it out across the state,
nice.
which was really awesome. And so that was like the first one, working on producing some more, because we got such a good response and feedback from it. But it was really important to make sure that the folks who were producing it, who were starring in it, were from New Mexico, right? Because a lot of people would have that narrative that there's no Black people here,
right,
which is invisibilizing and it's harmful. So we wanted to say, no, we're here. Here are people who all look different. By the way, we're not just all like, I don't know, hip hop artists like myself,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We're also scientists, and we're also like therapists, and we're also historians, to show that broad scope of folks who are teaching it. And then just to also show, yeah, there's Black history, New Mexican Black history, you know, from Estevan to Blackdom to, you know, to the Buffalo Soldiers, to all these other folks, and just to spread that, which is really awesome.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, one of my later friends from high school, who I actually didn't know that well, but we've become really good friends on Facebook, and his wife and him come out and visit, and they might even move here. They live mm-hmm. in Tennessee now. But he actually was a native New Mexican from Roswell. And that was like talking to him about the experiences in mm-hmm. southern New Mexico, you know, versus Albuquerque or Santa
totally.
Fe is completely different.
Yeah, they have huge, like Hobbs. I think Hobbs has one of the, if not the biggest African-American community in New Mexico. Yeah. And yeah, you go down to like the southern states near, and just the influence of like, folks who came in for military, you know, folks who are on the border communities, like Clovis, New Mexico, for example, has like a beautiful, rich history of like folks who were in the military who added on to the quote unquote Clovis sound, which is, you know, Buddy Holly
That's
and
right.
folks like that are known for, and just their experience and their input into like this history that is just so deep and rich.
Yeah. And people forget that B.B. King.
Oh yeah. B.B. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, it's definitely, we are so much richer mm-hmm. when we think about, you know, go beyond the myth and think about all the different influences.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like that. Mm-hmm. And were you involved in the big party they had for the 50th anniversary of hip hop?
Oh yeah, I threw that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I heard it was great. Uh-huh. Yeah.
We're doing it again this year. Actually, we just announced we're having, it was so good last year, and it was actually one of the biggest events in the Rail Yard. And for a lot of us, for me personally, the way I know this place is through hip hop
right.
as a touring musician. So my first, all the friends that I know from here are like B-boys and MCs and graffiti writers and like just folks of that ilk. And so when we threw that, it was really not only because it was the 50th anniversary of hip hop, which means so much, but seeing how big the response in the crowd was.
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks didn't understand how big hip hop is and how big the power is and how peaceful and beautiful it is also.
And how much people love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stereotypes, but essentially it was one of the most, not only the biggest, but one of the most diverse, naturally, without anyone trying, naturally, events like the graffiti riders, the B-boys, the B-girls, the fashion shows. It's like indigenous folks, Hispanics, Chicanos, Latinos, Black folks, white folks.
Yeah, the picture that we had in the front page was a sea of faces mm-hmm. of all different types, and it was really beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm excited. We're doing it again this year, August 9th, and the group is Diggable Planets, which is...
Oh, wow.
Which is... Yeah. Yeah. Look at his face. Yeah, exactly. Like,
is he happy?
It's a big get to get here. But we want to make sure that we keep on that this tradition that we started last year.
Well, that'll be exciting.
Be annual. Yeah.
I'm going to tell the family. They'll be, I'm old and I kind of stopped. Punk rock was my last big. Yeah. That's
what
still
year?
My favorite.
What year punk rock?
70s, late 70s, The Clash and
yeah.
all those guys and the Ramones and. I got to see The Clash in a very small club when I was like 19. It's probably, I say to this day, it's one of the best nights of my life. It was Lubbock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a guy named Joe Ely, who's like an Americana country, mm-hmm. real pure country singer, mm-hmm. but Western more. He's just hard to explain. He mm-hmm. tours with Bruce Springsteen, he's played with the Rolling Stones, and he and The Clash became like best buddies in London.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And he brought him back to Lubbock to play when they were on their American tour. Mm-hmm. And of course, they had to go to Buddy Holly's grave and go to his high school mm-hmm. and just meet all the people who had influenced him in Lubbock.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, it was a great night, and that music was so raw. And I think that's mm-hmm. part of the power of hip hop is it's mm-hmm. like really like from the heart, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the power of I think art in general, which is why I love being in the space that I get to be in, is because I just see like the power of of all the scenes of music at its core, like how much it affects people, how much joy and passion and anger and all of it.
Yeah.
But not only music, also like dance and film and poetry and all of the different ways that we can get to our deepest and most beautiful selves in that expression. I just think it's the best.
Yeah, no, and it really always makes me wonder in the United States why so much of the popular stuff doesn't have that kind of soul at the heart of it. Mm-hmm. And yet it sells more than other things, whether it's, you know, a big commercial movie or, you know, mm-hmm. the billionaire pop stars and stuff like that. But I always try to think that the people who like it, it does speak to them. So
absolutely. You know, yeah. And those formulas are based on something.
Yeah.
Right. It's
yeah.
like they figured out how to tap into your heart.
That's quick, right.
Real faster.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe you don't need 3 or 4 listens to get to, like, the reason I love hip hop is because one of my favorite quotes is, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
That's right, Emma.
Emma Goldman.
Yep.
Right? And like, I love that that understanding of just like, I'm just here for the party, yo. I'm just having a good time and dancing. And in the fourth time, I'm screaming, fight the power. I'm like, wait, what power? What? Okay. You know what yeah. I mean? And like, the message comes through. But sometimes people just get to that real quick. There's like, here's the formula to get directly to your chakras.
Yeah. I mean, pop works because it has that
for
hook
sure.
and we like it. And
we do, yeah.
But sometimes it's so shiny, I think it loses yeah. the you know, like a Buddy Holly song was mm-hmm. pop and it had a hook, but yeah. man, it had heart.
Yeah, yeah. I just feel like we just need more balance. Like I'm all for big pop movies and song and all that, as long as there's space for the other stuff too. Right?
Oh, that
and
makes
so
sense.
I just feel
yeah.
like, and that's with anything, you know, I'm just like, I'm all for that. It just feels like sometimes things get off balanced and we don't get to have our full humanity and perspective shown, right? We just get like kind of a mono way of expressing. And I think that can be dangerous when people just say, oh, that's whatever it is. That's what Black people are when I'm looking at this hip hop. That isn't the full spectrum. That's what queer folks are when I'm looking at this expression over here.
Right.
And we don't just get to be like full human beings. So.
No, and we don't understand that people can be all sorts of things. And I mean, Beyonce mm-hmm. had to do a country album
yeah.
because they were so rude to her when she went to the Country Music Association. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. how crazy is that
yeah.
that she has to remind people, yes, the roots of this music right. also included, you know, these African-American
absolutely.
Singers and she did pretty good too, mm-hmm. I have to say. That's the one genre I probably know the best because of how I grew up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my, you know, every week we listen to the Grand Ole Opry and all
oh,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And she did not do badly. I liked it.
That's
yeah.
good to hear. Yeah, I need to, that's one of the genres outside of like Patsy Cline and like Johnny Cash. Like, I like that old, like that.
Oh,
that
no.
Era
no, go back to Lefty Frizzell and that kind of
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
yeah.
Okay. You need to give me a list.
I'll give you a list.
All right. Cool.
That is
Lefty Frizzell.
Yeah.
I like that name.
Oh, he's awesome. He
yeah.
he does this song called Long Black Veil, uh-huh. and it'll just make the hairs on your
really?
Arm shiver. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's good.
Sweet.
Yes. And on that note, it has been another Conversations Different, and we will be back next week.